You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Welcome back, my listeners. I know it's been a long time since we've last had contact with each other, but the good news, and you know, maybe the bad news for some of you, is that we are back. I am back, and so is The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. A stoppage of play, a COVID-19 pandemic, and nothing else could stop us from bringing you the best EuroLeague podcast back to your computers, your telephones, your iPads, or wherever you seem to listen from. And not only listen, but this year you can watch, as we will also bring you The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas in video format. That's right, a new twist to our third season. The last 2 years of The Crossover podcast have been all about quality since our first ever interview with David Blatt. And things are just going to get better this year as we start our third season with one of the best coaches in all of Europe, a guy that seems to keep a low profile, but we love to hear him talk, and we love to hear all of his ideas and his philosophies. There's no doubt that it helps that no matter where he goes, success either seems to follow him, or he just packs it along in his suitcase and brings it with him. The one, the only, Andrea Trinchieri. Welcome to The Crossover, sir. How are you?
Thank you very, very much. I'm good and healthy. This is the most important thing.
We talked about this just before we started, that healthy is the new, hey, va bene.
Healthy is the new good.
It's new good, exactly. I've always thought, since I've watched you, I don't think we've met each other personally.
Yes, but I love you as a player, believe me.
Thank you very much.
You were so talented. Amazing.
Thank you. Those days are gone, my man. That's why I got a microphone sitting in front of me now. And I appreciate that. We'll talk about that later because there's one part about that I want to talk to you about. My research, and I always assumed you're just 100% Italian. I mean, the name, the language, everything. But you're not. You're like a mix of a little bit of everything.
I'm a melting pot.
Yeah, you're like a melting. We used to call it in the States, we call it the mutt. You know, that dog that didn't really
have a
So, what's the background about that?
I was born and raised in Italy. My dad was the son of an Italian diplomatic that married a Kentucky woman. He was born in Panama and lived all over the world because, you know, diplomats goes Edinburgh, Prague, Madrid, Rome, Boston. So almost everywhere.
And you moved everywhere with them?
No. That was my dad.
That was your dad. Okay.
So, and then my dad decided after he went to Harvard, graduated in Harvard, and then start his, let's say, life, and went to his roots, to Italy. Mm-hmm. And by before that, he had a stop in London for some business, and he met my mom. And my mom was from Yugoslavia, half from Montenegro and half from Croatia. Right. And she was studying in London. So they met there, and the rest is that I was born and raised in Italy, but I had the chance to travel all over the world. And that believe me, that helped me a lot in my job.
Yeah, I can imagine. And there's just the fact that you have such an international background with everybody.
Yeah.
But before we get deep into it, I this is all about you. So this is a part of it. I like to talk about the past up into the future, up into the present. But I have to ask you quickly, before we really get deep into your story, I was commentating the game in Madrid a couple of weeks ago, and I know this is probably going to bring a smile to your face as soon as I start talking about it. Two tees in the first three and a half minutes of the game, and you got kicked out. Has that ever happened to you before? You're ejected to 3.5 minutes into the game. I didn't even know what to say. Do you remember? Obviously, you remember that.
No. I still have a scar. So it was a very low point. I believe I will never forget it. Mm-hmm. Because I feel now very stupid because I didn't want it. Right. Okay. I may say I want an attack because I saw something that I didn't like.
Right, of course.
But this is the impact of the corona. Empty stands. We are all a little bit more stressed. And referees hears everything.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And I said something that I deserved attack. It's no doubts, you know. Right. It's part of the job. It's part of the business.
It's part.
I
of
do my job. They do their job. We have boundaries, and I crossed the line. But I believe that I didn't cross the line twice. But right. For sure, I take it on me. It's my mistake, and the worst thing that I let my team down. And this right. is something that shouldn't happen.
Well, that, I mean, I'll get into that with you later, but you've always been that type of coach. You've been the type of coach that takes responsibility no matter what. And I believe that I've even seen you take responsibility when you probably didn't even need to take responsibility, but you do anyways. And that, as a player and as an ex-player, it makes you feel good about your coach.
I don't know any good general that stays behind the troops.
Exactly.
Sometimes you have to be there and take also the bullets that are not yours. This is part of the job. And I always ask my players to go over the limit. You know, I push them. I'm demanding. I always sit on their shoulders, you know.
Right.
There's no mercy for commitment. But sometimes they need to feel that you can do something for them too.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the players respect that in the long run. I think I felt that with Zeljko Obradović. I felt like he was the most demanding coach I ever had. But when you look back, you're like, man, he made me a man. And he made me who I am today. But this isn't about me. It's about you. So you spent most of your time in Italy growing up.
I spent, but let's say three. It's not true, because I would say that 4 months per year when school was over, I was traveling and going to Yugoslavia to study in foreign countries. And let's say I was always on the move.
Yeah, that was my question. What did you study in school? What was your, I mean, I'm assuming you're a good student.
I was good student in things I liked. And well, I was supposed to go to Harvard. Everything was set up like former alumni. My dad, you know, wanted that very, very hard.
Of course.
But I didn't want. I want to coach. I was in love with the game. I was crazy, and that was insane. That was the, you know, I had big, big troubles with my family because I didn't follow the path that was made for me, you know. And basically, they said to me, how can you think you are not a player? I was 19 years old. And
you were playing at the time. You were a player.
I believe that was not playing, you know, that I was a terrible player. Maybe I was smart. I can see the game. I can pass the ball, but I can play only downhill, uphill. You know, it wasn't, well, you know, not athlete enough, not quick enough. You know, I understood that I could not play at any decent level. So I wanted to stay with this thing that I fell in love, basketball again. So let's start coaching very early. Maybe this is the right way. But that was in conflict with what my family planned for me.
Why is it that the people that go to Harvard and Yale and all those other schools, the big schools, they always want their kids to follow in their footsteps? I went to like Niagara University. I was the one that told my kids, don't go there.
You know. Because you were a player and you know how was the feeling of the grandstand in front of fans playing. You know, our feelings are unforgettable for three lives, not one life. You know, still have goosebumps, I believe, if you go back in your memories.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
But it was different. So there was hard times because they thought, my dad was very pragmatic, said, how you can think and make a living from a hobby? You know, you're a coaching kid. It's a hobby, you know. I was resilient. I would say it's a, I kept going, grinding, and now I'm here.
And when was the moment where he decided, your dad or your mom and dad decided that, okay, you know what, let's let him follow his passion instead of...
When he saw me on TV in National Italian TV and I was assistant coach in Milan, I said, maybe this could be something more than a hobby. It was 10 years later.
Talk about resilience, because you're talking about going to Harvard at 18 or 19.
Yeah, it was 10 years later. Yeah.
You had to be resilient for almost 12 years.
My mom was doing the diplomatic part in the family.
As you're growing up, I mean, most players, and I think you've already kind of answered this question for me, most players, they don't dream about coaching. They dream about playing. You said before you kind of like looked in the mirror and said, hey, look at maybe the playing part isn't going to be for me, but I love the ins and outs of the game, the X's and the O's. and maybe that's more my style. Was that your attitude to get into coaching? So as you were doing this and as you were playing,
I was just totally in love for this smart game. You know, I really love basketball. It's a passion. So I just wanted to be, to don't lose time and opportunities. What can I do? You can be media guy, but that year was different than now. You know, it was, you know, you need to have a different path. You need to go to the journalist, and it was completely different, you know. So I said, coaching is the only thing that it was like love at the first sight. You know, I really like everything of coaching. And then, you know, I started coaching my former teammates. And
right, of course.
They were very happy when I told them that I'm coach. And I never knew if they were happy because they didn't have a bad player on the roster or because they think that I can help them. You know, you never know. But it was a good start. At least I had their support.
So you had to fight. You had to fight with the fact that you didn't feel as though you were a good player. You had to fight with the fact
that... horrible. Please.
Okay, all right. Well, I was
don't be politically correct.
No, one thing I'm not known for is being politically correct, but I'm just trying to be nice in this.
Okay. Don't need.
So you're a horrible player. We got that out in the open. I'm assuming around 18, 19, you decided that you want to start coaching.
Yes.
And not only are you fighting the fact that it's during these times, Italy's on the way down as far as basketball is concerned, and it's, you know, as a country and everything else, it's not what it was in the 80s and early 90s, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And then you're also fighting your parents who want you to go in a whole different direction. What makes you this resilient over 10 years to wait and to finally get, and I mean, we can go into what you did for those 10 years, but I'd like to get into the fact of what was it like, the fight and then the arrival of being an assistant coach at Olympia Milano.
You should not ask me, maybe a shrink. it was totally crazy, a crazy thing. But sometimes you need to ride the wave.
Right.
Even if a big wave, if it, you're afraid to fall. And, you know, you need some crazy things in your life. That was not a logic decision. Mm-hmm. It was a decision dictated by heart, passion, and I said, I want it. And I will try until somebody says, no, you cannot try anymore.
How much of it is hard work and persistence, and how much of it is luck?
It's a good question. Without luck, I don't know any successful person in any kind of business. But luck, not luck that we think, you are lucky. You can...
Right.
Help luck. And at the end of the day is a circle. Bad luck and good luck is always even. But you, with your persistence, you can help that good things happen. When the thing doesn't go in the right way, I always say that before you win, you have to know, you have to feel what means losing. And this will build up your winning thing inside of you. And sometimes you lose a final with a bank shot, you know. You prepare everything at the right way and you lost it. And then you can go home with the feeling of the bad luck, okay? Right. But if you stay with that, you will not have good luck the next final. Right.
We talk about that all the time in this game. And it's you know, one of my favorite sayings that coaches told me over the years is you're only as good as your last game.
Exactly. So,
you know, I had that one lucky night of 63 points.
But I remember that, believe me.
but all I remember about it was 3 days later, we played Barcelona at home and I played one of the worst games of my life. And it was like, okay, well, you know, you get shot down to earth really quick.
Luck can go with good with fate, I believe.
I've always asked that question to people because I think they're derivatives of each other, because I think without hard work, you can't be lucky. And without luck, it's hard to get where you're going to be. So six years as an assistant in really, really rough times in Milan, I think you were assistant coach for 4 or 5 different head coaches.
Yep.
At the time, the different owners, different sponsors, and so on. Everything was going crazy. Did you feel like, at one point in those 6 years, you're being stepped over, you're being looked over as an assistant. You were going to be a lifetime assistant because you couldn't get that.
No. That was not the plan. Basically, I had a promise from the club to in 2003 to, they changed the coach after a cup game in Badalona. Mm-hmm. Rudy Fernandez killed us, young Rudy.
I think I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and the club decided to change the coach right after the game, and they came to me. And are you ready? I'll give my best, for sure. Okay. When we land back, we'll call you, and we have to, you need to help us to push the team. We need to get better, you know, standard. Right. So we land, lunchtime, I go home. I had to coach the junior team game, and I said, keep the mobile on, give it to somebody because the owner will call you. He wants you to step over. Okay. Basically, they never called. They had a commitment, but they never called. And in the morning after, so 2 days after, 7:30 in the morning, they called, can you come to the office? We need to talk to you. It's very important. Okay. I went to the office, and basically they said to me, you have to help us. Yes, I know. You already told me.
Right.
In 2 hours, the new head coach is going to be here. So you have to help him. Yeah, that's the real truth. No big deal. Everything happens for a reason.
Of course.
And I said, stop. Let me think. I went up in my office. I packed my stuff. I get down because the general manager office was first floor. Coach's offices were second floor. I said, I cannot do that. You need positive energy. I cannot give you any positive energy in this moment, so I'm quitting. And basically, with nothing in my hands, nothing for the future, I quit the team of my city, the team that I was rooting for. Wow. I went to see all the EuroLeague finals when I was 18, 19.
Right, of course.
Lausanne, with my friends. So was very, very difficult, but I didn't have any doubts of doing that. Another crazy decision. I believe there are three ways of taking decision. One is with the brain, logic, rational. Mm. One is with the heart, that is passion. And the third one, that is by far the best one, is with the guts, with the stomach.
Right.
That goes over everything. It's you know that is the right decision, even if it's painful.
Well, you know, in this case, I think you said it. You said that you felt like you couldn't give any positive energy to a new coach coming, a new team. So that's actually, it's a very unselfish move, because
I felt it was a very unfair situation, and right. Basically this killed my engine of, as a workaholic, of a passionate coach, of giving everything, trying to help in any possible way. And I said, I don't have this anymore. It's like a shutdown. So
from quitting what's almost sounds like a childhood dream, you know, to be within this club, you go to Vanoli, which is a third. It's your first head coaching job. It's your first, like, I'm the man. It's my gig. But I don't want to be cynical, as I've said, but you get your job, you get your team, you're now going to be the boss, but it's in a third division team. What's that moment like for you? Like, you're leaving your childhood.
For sure it's a downgrade, but could be even worse. Could be even fourth division. Could be nothing.
True.
And I really took it like the best opportunity in my life. And I had the luck to have an interview with the owner, a great businessman and an unbelievable person. And he interviewed 10 coaches. They had a very bad season. It was a very solid economical club, but with no structure, okay? Right. And many coaches wanted the job because they can really do things, but they didn't do things. You know, mm-hmm. Was a small city close to Milano with packed arena. It's important to have fans, you know, 4,000 people at the game in third division. And coming from a bad season, he had interviewed with 10 coaches. I was one of the last. And he called me in his office downtown Milano, in one of the best places in Milano, Piazza San Babila. Amazing office. And I was ready for the regular interview, you know how it goes. And we start talking. He made some standard questions. Suddenly I gave some answers. He stopped me after 12 minutes, something like 10 minutes. I said, stop. I understood everything. I don't need anything else. Thank you very much. I let you know. The morning after, he called me and hired me.
What was the night like, though? Did you, when he stops you in the interview, normally that doesn't happen. You have to go away thinking, okay, that's either I impressed him or he hates me.
I felt that like a sparkle, right, between great chemistry, okay? Mm-hmm. But you never know. You know, this is a right. big businessman. He can make up his mind and change his opinion like this, you know? But anyway, I went home with good vibes. But still, let's see how it goes. And the morning after, I started to be the coach there in Cremona and the city where I live now.
How much time was that between you packing up your stuff in the offices of Milano?
It was 14th of February when I packed my stuff.
Valentine's Day.
Yeah. I love that day. You know, I love that day.
You're a romantic at heart.
No, not at all, but no problem. I skipped that day now. and then that was June.
So it wasn't not that bad. I mean, there was a little bit of time where you must have been thinking like, man, was this the right decision? Was it the right idea? Was it whatever? Success is going to be something that obviously is going to come up many times throughout this conversation. But this is your first actual moment of success where you took this team that, as you just mentioned to me, excuse me, I didn't know, was one game away from being down to the fourth division.
Yep.
To moving up to the second division. I mean, we talk about the fact that first division, second division, third division, ACB, EuroLeague, they're all relative because the work that you put in throughout a season and the job that you do, it doesn't matter what division you are in when you win something.
I love what you're saying. I love it. It is true.
It's everything that you've put in, and people don't get that. Like, oh, well, he only won the third division. No, I mean, it's just as hard to win a third division as it is to win the EuroLeague.
Yeah, and I felt like this, and I didn't feel that was a downgrade. You know, whenever you have the chance to do things, I consider myself blessed. Yeah. I had the chance to be a head coach in a good club with an amazing owner, a lot of fans. Yes, it was not EuroLeague. But believe me, I was coaching there with the dream to coach EuroLeague.
Of course.
And they people ask me, what is your dream? Coach EuroLeague. Yes, but you're in third division. I said, no worries. Right. I'll get there somehow.
I love that. And it was a question I have for you later, but I'll ask it now. It's because we're going to jump ahead a little bit here, but what's better? What's better? I mean, obviously, it's better to make that journey than it is to just arrive to the destination before you've actually paid the tolls. And you know what I mean? It's like you've gone through it all. You've gone through the assistant coach. You went third division, second division, first division to EuroLeague. The journey's amazing when you look back on it.
I got emotional when I talk about journeys. And Americans are amazing for catchphrases, you know? Mm-hmm. And you are able to condense. Like an Italian can talk 6 months to say one thing and you say it in one sentence. So you're talking about journey and destination. Destination for us is lifting a trophy, okay? But I always feel this, that trophies carry dust, memories live forever. I remember every person in my journey, everything who gave me something, who took away something from me.
Exactly.
Who taught me something. Who made me better, who made me worse. Mm-hmm. And this is the reason I'm doing this.
And all those people have the same importance, no matter whether positive, negative.
They always impact your life, good and bad. And when it's bad, you need to find energies to overcome adversities. Mm-hmm. And this is part of the journey.
Let's keep on the journey. I usually find something in common with some players, mostly coaches that are my age. So we're always somewhere along the line or somewhere that we have something in common along the way. And one of them is you actually went to a team that I play with in Caserta. And of course, when I was there, it was Schneider. I think it was after you left Vanoli, right? You went to Caserta first.
Yes.
And I mean, I was there when it was the top of the thing. They sent me, coach, I didn't know where I was. I had no idea. The only reason why I knew I was in Italy was because my mom was Napoletana. And it was her dream that she would go to Italy someday to visit me. I got to play with guys like Oscar, Gentile, Esposito, Dall'Agnello, you know, Generali, Pietro Generali. And I had no idea where I was, coach. And it was so crazy. And you got to coach there, but not in their big moments. They were second division at the time. But the only thing I saw was a short period that you were there. Did you only coach 8 games? What happened there? What happened in Caserta?
They didn't believe in me. It's simple.
That quick.
Time is a luxury.
Mm-hmm.
Time is precious. And they didn't have patience. I believe the record was 5-4, 9 games, 5-4. Winning record, but basically they didn't believe I can deliver.
Right.
It's their choice.
It's interesting that you see the teams over the years that are the better teams are the teams that develop consistency and develop, and we're going to talk about this later too, a culture.
Yeah.
And you develop this consistency, it just makes for a better, it makes it easier for players to come in and accept a new role in a team. You kind of have that culture. I always use that word, already set up, where even if you have 5 or 6 new players, they buy into it easier when it's not constantly changing. And when you see teams like Caserta who went through that, it was always, you know, I need to win now. I need to win tomorrow. And if I don't win tomorrow, we're going to look for somebody else. And that's, you see that in teams. But anyway, let's not dwell on Caserta right now, because
no, it was listen, that was a journey.
It is part of the journey.
That could only make me better. Take away the bitter feelings of the moment. It's a poison that every coach before or later is going to take. I always say that the team is always the picture of the organization.
Mm.
Always. There's no shortcuts about this. So if the team is unstable, means that the organization is unstable.
And vice versa. It goes both ways, yeah. So now your next trip in the second division is Lazio in Veroli. Coach of the year in second division. It's constant success, no matter, I mean, taking away what we just talked about with Caserta, it was another successful season for you. The wins start rolling in. I think word of mouth now is like, hey, Trinchieri, who is this guy? What's he doing? He's doing all this stuff in the second and third division. Again, I'm going to ask the same question I kind of asked before. Was there any moment where you felt like that dream of coaching a European team was going to get stuck? Because back in our day, you developed a fame or fortune or a name of being second division, at least as a player. If you played a long time in second division, you were a second division player. Were you concerned about that?
I don't like these labels, and I fight this thing. So I want to be transversal. I want to go. And I understood, not that day, but now, that the only thing I can control, and not always look in Madrid what happened to me, is myself. So I want to be the best version of myself.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do whatever it takes to be better any given day, okay? What can I do more than this? Nothing. Then somebody else will decide if this is enough, if I'm competent enough to get the job at the highest level. So my thing is, I want to be the best version of myself, fighting my liabilities, my weaknesses, implementing my strength. And this is the only way you can climb out of a hole, be better. I don't know, and this is the same for a player. You're a second division player, invest in yourself, be better. You know, I had one talk with Saša Danilović when I was in Partizan, you know, many talks, but one thing that I will never forget, to me, he was one of the most dominant mentally player I ever saw on the court.
He's amazing.
He was dominating the game with his presence, his charisma, everything, you know? And I asked him, what's your secret, Saša? You know, like, no secret. When I was not making shot, I went into the gym and take 1,000 make shot. When I was feeling tired, I went to run in the park to get my condition. When they were beating me up in the game, I went to lift weights. It's very simple.
I mean, it's a simple equation, but with a difficult answer.
But that says everything, eh?
Yeah. I mean, it's because I don't know. We'll talk about kids later on, but Coach of the Year is a pretty prestigious award, no matter where you're at. Again, I go third division, second division, early. It doesn't matter. You won Coach of the Year because you were the best within that group of people that are your peers and the people that you're fighting against the whole time. How important was that for you? I mean, you don't seem very egotistical whatsoever, but you seem like you work within yourself. How important was the recognition of Coach of the Year with this battle? I mean, I'm assuming for your parents it was huge. It's like, yes, he's doing something finally with this coaching thing. We let him go.
I don't even know if they know it.
Yeah, really?
Telling you the truth. But how much important can be one individual award in a team sport?
That's essentially what my question is. But at the same time, you're fighting for that dream of yours, which makes it important for you, although you're in a team sport. You've moved up a division with this team, which is something they've never done before, and you get this award. Is it that important?
I cannot say it's important, but I cannot say that it's not important for the CV.
Right.
You cannot expect that everybody knows exactly what you do, how you do it, when you do it, with whom you do it. You know, it needs a lot of time to scout coaches, players, and not every team has this opportunity. But then I moved to Cantu, and I'm sure the GM, Bruno Arrigoni, didn't think about that. It's more for, let's say, the image of the thing. Then whoever knows basketball knows that Coach of the Year is something very relative. Mm. Okay, like best scorer. Okay, yeah, you are a great scorer. But the thing, you at the end of the year, you look at the rings, not at the points.
Yeah.
This is the point.
But the difference is a great scorer can, a top scorer can be on a bad team. And a good coach, a Coach of the Year, is probably on a pretty good team because he's won throughout that season.
I had the luck to have a great rookie there, and you know him very well.
Who was it?
Kyle Hines.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that Kyle was with you. What was he like when he first showed up? Because he's so.
I just tell you one thing. Kyle Hines, one of the best EuroLeague players ever. There are game changer and there are team changers. He's exactly. A team changer. So the first thing, I still laugh. Basically, he parked his car in a river. This is the first thing he did. Rookie stuff on a hill in Italy. So
did he put the emergency brake on?
Of course.
That's the one American story in Europe I've never heard. That's a great one, though, because I've heard so many about cars that it's awesome.
More than a river is where the rain water flows. Oh. And he was trying to park to go to his first practice, and basically he, boom, parked the car. They gave him an old Mercedes-Benz, okay? And his Italian teammates saved his life because they hide everything. They pull up the car without letting me know anything. So I said, and they after that, they told me the story. I was laughing because this is typical rookie stuff.
And American rookie stuff too on top of it, which is
on a village up in a hill 1 hour from Rome.
Americans don't know nothing about, we don't know anything about about handbrakes and emergency brakes. We drive automatics all the time.
A place where the biggest street was, I believe, the wingspan of Kyle was covering, he can touch the two houses of the street.
When he was young like that, was he a leader? I mean, he's obviously become a leader of teams. Like you said,
he was a leader by example.
By example.
One of the toughest players I ever saw on a court. And he gave it every game, he was able to absorb something new. Every practice, he was curious to learn something new. Right. And this is basically how he became one of the best player in EuroLeague.
He's
hands down, eh? Hands down. So
I always say the same thing about him. I don't care about what kind of player he is or he was. When I see things like him getting off the bus at the Final Four in Baskonia in Victoria a couple of years ago, walking into the hotel and every player on the team and all four buses walked through the fans, and he stopped and went back and signed every autograph and gave away a couple of T-shirts.
He's an amazing human being, but this is connected with his career.
Right, exactly. It is. It's all connected. It's all
so to me, he is one of the greatest team changer. He brings something to the team that you cannot see in the stat line. You cannot see in a highlight play. He does all these things, but he is what it is because he's also a special person. Right. You cannot divide the things.
I don't really like him, though, because he's been trying to take my job for 3 years and he's still playing at the same time. So, I mean, you know, I tell him all the time, I'm like, just keep playing. This way you won't come take my job. Cantu is, for you at this point, big time. This is the dream come true, even though the other small journeys that you took along the way were part of it, like we talked about. But this is it. This is like, boom, I'm here. For me, it was one of the historic teams. When I was in Caserta, Cantu was like with Varese and Milano and Roma. And
there are special places for basketball in the world where you can smell basketball and every corner. And Cantu is this because the chemistry between the town, the team, the fans, it's amazing. It's insane. Everything is pushed, it's boosted by this thing. And was a really unbelievable experience.
You brought this team back onto the European map, so to speak. Yeah. You won, again, back-to-back coaches awards, but we're not going to dwell on Coach of the Year awards. Like you said, they collect dust. They don't do anything else. You won the Italian Cup. You won one title, but you were there the whole time. It was like Montepaschi was like the Michael Jordan, you know, where of the Italian League, stopping everybody.
Or the Empire of the Evil, like the Yankees.
the Yankees, yeah, exactly. Do you feel, even though those 4 years were amazing 4 years, that you just feel like, man, I think I could have won a couple more titles there with that team and with everything that we accomplished?
Yes, because this is in the heart of a competitor. I feel myself as a competitor, a fierce competitor. But when they hire me, they tell me, listen, we have one of the lowest budget. We need to save the division. We need to do the things properly. We don't have to go too big because we cannot. We want to stay away from problems. We are here to do our best. Right. We don't need anything more. Just save the division.
We call that in English treading water.
Exactly. I like it. The first game I played was with Benetton, Treviso, at home, and we lost the game. Okay. 7-8 points. A game that we could play 3 days and never win. Okay. This was my first game in first division with Cantu. Then the second game, we go to play against my former team, Cremona Vanoli, that move up after years in the first division. So they are newcomer. And we're down by 15, 16, 17. They were scoring everything. Okay. In where I live, you know, against my former team. And I see the people around the team started, wow, if we lose this, it's going to turn in a bad season.
Right.
Okay. Eventually, we won at the buzzer.
Wow.
An amazing, crazy shot at the buzzer. And from that point, we started getting better, getting better, getting better. So we made the playoffs and we started our saga with Montepaschi, playing the semifinal. I got sweep. Was a sweep. Okay. But then started everything. So if you ask me, I want to win some more. Of course, yes. But if I have to be rational, we did the max out of the max out of the max of everything. You know, we really squeeze all the juice.
Exactly. You got the team, like I said, back on the European map. You're in the Euro Cup. You went to the Euro League. Yeah, I mean, you did things that I'm sure this town.
Went to one shot to the playoffs.
In Euro
League. Basile shot against Barcelona in the last game of the top. We went to the top 16 in Europe.
And that was in 2012. This is years after, I mean, and I don't want to downgrade Italian basketball, but the crisis hit it hard back in early 2000s and so on, you know, and we all know that. But I mean, you're bringing a team, like you said, in a town, as we say in Spain, a pueblo, you know, back to Europe, which, and not only back to Europe, but back to their roots, because their roots were as one of the best in Europe. And when you do that, it's going to be maybe somewhat of a controversial question, since I'm doing this a EuroLeague interview. How much strain does it take a team like that with that budget to all of a sudden start to play EuroLeague games, travel, schedule? Everything changes now. You're not playing that one game a week.
You don't think about these changes. You're just enjoying the journey. Yeah, this is the grandstand. You were waiting for. We were waiting for this for years. Exactly. It was 20 years that Cantu was out of that. So that was my first time. I could walk through Europe, not travel.
I mean, obviously, your experience gives you the opinion, a very educated opinion. With this new EuroLeague league, where, you know, you're playing 30-something games a year, plus the domestic games and so on and so on. As a player, man, I know it's different as a coach, because coach needs to plan and coach needs to coach and they need to practice. But as a player, I'm like, I can't believe I hear all these players complain about the amount of games they play sometimes. I'm like, give me as many games as you could possibly give me. I'm fine with it.
I disagree a little.
Okay.
Because it's really tough. It's really tough because there's no mercy. The game is more demanding physically. There are more athletes, and you need to stay healthy. The truth is always in the middle. It's amazing to play so much games, but it's also very heavy.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, as a player, it's like back in the day, I was like, man, if you could just give me so many games. And a lot of teams travel a lot better than they used to travel also. And the courts are a lot better, and the sneakers are a lot better. The doctors are a lot better. Everything's a lot better, you know? Even the food is better. But so I guess maybe some of it comes from a little bit of jealousy that I wish I was born now. You know, I was playing now instead of 25 years ago.
True. You were a pioneer, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, pioneers never, they're only remembered for certain things, and that's it. And that goes away. Now your first trip is, I always ask this, now you go to Unix, you go to Russia. This is actually your first time out of Italy as a coach. You've traveled all over the world.
And I never get back after that day.
Yeah, you've never been back since then, exactly. But adapting to this different culture, was it difficult? I always ask that to Americans that come from the States to play for Europe, and you're in Russia.
You have a good point, very true, but everything depends on how you embrace this challenge. I talk from the Italian standpoint of view. If you go to Kazan and your priority is to have the coffee like you have at home, or the pasta al dente like you have at home, don't go. You are not ready.
Right.
If you are ready to adapt, to adjust to a new reality, and give your best, you're going to enjoy every single moment. There is a good thing in every place.
I love that philosophy. I mean, it doesn't matter where you go. It depends on you to make that a good place.
I had troubles with young Americans coming. Coach, I'm not happy. Why? I don't have Taco Bell at midnight in this city. Okay, but maybe you can have spaghetti aglio olio peperoncino at midnight, cooked by a lady that is the best thing in the world. Just don't compare.
Enzo Esposito's mother used to cook for me every lunch. I practiced 2 times a day, every day in Caserta, and I gained like 7 kilos. It was great. It was the best experience of my life.
If you compare, you're going to be unhappy. But if you're open, you're going to be the happiest person, and you're going to be a better person.
Now you take this team, you win the VTB League, runner-up in the Euro Cup, and you get, why not, Coach of the Year in the Euro Cup. That's just one more trophy, as you say, to collect dust in your award.
Yes, but that year was painful because we lost against Valencia the final.
That was my question. What do you remember most about that final?
I believe that we had a great year. We deserve to be better in the final. We just arrived at the final in a bad moment with injuries, and we could not perform. Valencia played great. They deserve. And I remember, it's a painful memory because I believe that we did the right things to build up a better opportunity.
That leads me to one of my favorite questions that I ask people, because it's an issue that I have about my career. Do you tend to remember the bad moments more than you do the good moments? Do they, like when you think about your basketball memories, of course I'm done other than what I'm doing now. You're still in it. You're still creating new memories, but
I will answer you in a different way. We, you, me, everybody is the product of their experience. Mm-hmm. Okay. Good and bad. Okay. But the human nature tends always to the comfort zone.
Right.
For everybody who's very successful in the life is who's able to take his ass out of the comfort zone more than the others. Right. So bad memories are like scars. Sometimes you need to touch the scar and remember how that happened, why that happened. And touching that scar, trying to go back in that bitter feelings will give you a boost the next day.
Right.
I don't leave bad memories like, wow, why? You know, bad luck. I leave that. What I could do better, what I could do different. And sometimes I said, I did whatever I could. It wasn't enough.
And that's life. I mean, that's just life in general. And like you said, the people who are able to learn from those experiences are usually the people that are more successful. And it's always been a big thing for me, because when I look back into the championships that I've won, I don't remember them as much as I do the championships that I lost. And that's like, and sometimes I think it's an evil curse that was given to me, but I think it was what helped me make me a better player along the way.
It's the curse of the GOAT.
Well, I don't know about GOAT, but
this is a trademark.
Oh, really?
Believe me, I don't know the best of the best that are not obsessed.
Yeah.
Obsession is part of being the best.
Yeah, I mean it is. I mean it's sad sometimes, but it's part of what it is. If you're not obsessed with being better, it's going to be very difficult to be better. Enough. What's the book I'm thinking about? I can't think of the name right now. The 10,000 Hours. I can't remember. I don't know if you've read that book. I can't remember the name right now. But I'll think of it as we go. Bros is now you're in one of these German teams that are competitors on the European stage. You won 3 years in a row, the German Cup. You won a couple titles there, and you had great years. And they've always been that team that you mark in the EuroLeague as just, it's a hard win. You know, it's a hard defeat. It's a hard win when you go play a team like Brose Bamberg. And coaching that team now puts you kind of in a European mode, a consistent European mode. So that's like another step up already from where you were before. What is it like to coach a team like that? Yeah, because most of the things that we've talked about here so far has been teams with less budget, with less advantages than other teams, so to speak, financially. Is this something you enjoy? Is it a curse? Is it something you look for?
It was amazing. It was an amazing run because we put together many different things. And, you know, in the sea, big fish eat the small fish.
Mm-hmm.
So we were not a big fish. Right. But at least we wanted to be a quick fish. So if they have to eat us, they have to work hard. Okay?
Exactly.
And we wanted to build a system that was, of course, different because we have different budget, that was not a big city, was not a big name. So we wanted to do all the other little things, take a player, make him better, and lift the team, improve the team while we're improving players.
Right.
So we sent 4 players to the NBA.
Right, exactly.
And we took players from second division. We don't took players from the NBA and sent them back to the NBA. So we took players that were out of the map. And with their commitment and with our system, we made something amazing. It was sublimation.
It was an amazing 3 years that came to a terrible halt. It was the first time that you've actually got fired, right, from a team?
Oh, this is the second time. The first time was in Caserta.
Well, but Caserta didn't count. You were there for 8 games. That doesn't really...
That was my mistake. I should leave after the third year, perfect year. We lost the whole starting 5 in 1 week. Three players went to the NBA, and the other 2 players left for big teams, Real Madrid and Olympiacos. And basically, that was a rebuilding,
right,
without having an owner that has the patience of the rebuilding. Okay, it was a total rebuilding, and I shouldn't stay. I should have the right feel for the moment and the situation. I did my max. They were on the map of European basketball with a specific brand, not the greatest team, but the team that will always do their things in the right way. And that was my mistake. Was a bad ending for an amazing love story.
But it's what you mentioned before also. It's just part of a coach's history, part of a coach's life. I mean, it happens. And it's not going to be the first time. It's not going to be the last time. It's always going to happen. This is even, you go to Partizan now. Is this even, because obviously it's a classic, European classic, is Partizan is one of my, you know, whenever you talk Partizan, it bleeds basketball. No. But this team was in financial ruins over the last few years.
They were a bad result. Again, all my friends said, are you crazy?
Yeah, when I saw that they signed you, I said the same thing. I'm like, how did they sign him?
You know, people were screaming at me on the phone, you're going to kill your career. This would be your grave. Okay. But I felt that I needed something different. I felt that I need a hard reset. I felt that I need a huge challenge. I felt that I need to do something different. And I felt that I can do it.
You did. And you did it. You put them back on the European map, a team that had nothing.
That was a synergy between fans that are something that I cannot describe. I cannot describe. There's no enough time, enough words to explain that unconditional love and support.
Maybe there is, and maybe I can make it quick for you. I did this podcast, I think, last year or 2 years ago with Coach Zizic. He literally told me when he went to coach against Partizan, his mom was on the floor cheering for Partizan, not for him.
I didn't expect anything else. It's like this. It's a very good example.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best example there is. It's the best example there is. But again, you put them back on the map. And now, again, we're not going to get back too much into where you're at right now, because that's in the present time. There's a lot to go so far in this European season, obviously. We'd be fools to think that your record right now is anything that might be that might show us what's going to happen at the end of the season, because there's so far to go. But what I wanted to talk about here with this team is something that has been consistent throughout this whole interview. You walk into these teams and you tend to you help put a team together in a very short period of time, and where most coaches need more time to develop team chemistry. You've been able to do it in the first year, no matter where you go.
The secret is very simple. The players.
But you can't have the same players no matter where you go, coach. Let me fight you on this. The only common denominator here is you in all these teams. You're the common denominator, because there's always different players. You're not bringing the same players with you.
I disagree, because the first thing that I can tell you, the players gave me the chance to coach them, to speed up the process, to put together a group of guys and make them a team. And you don't have time to do it. You need to go hard. You need to be super demanding. You don't have no mercy. So you have to push. Smart players understand that this can help them, and they gave you the chance to do it. I don't know one coach that can be successful without the support of their players.
Of course, but you have to win that support also.
Okay. If I'm there, I assume that I'm competent, professional, and passionate enough. So this gets me the job. This takes me in the building, okay, at that level. Then I have to go quick to their heart and soul, explain them how we're going to do the things. At the end of the day, the players just want one thing, to be traded fairly. Mm-hmm. So I'm hard because I want the best from them. I want to take their ass out of the comfort zone every day to make them better, because I am in a situation where if they get better, I win more games.
Of course.
And they understand that whatever I'm doing also for them, not for me.
Is it easier for you as a coach because of your reputation now to develop that respect? Does it come quicker?
Reputation opens some doors, but then is the first 20 minutes of the first practice where they decide you can do it or you cannot do it. It's very simple.
Players don't care about your reputation. They don't care about how many games you won.
Let's say they are more open. Oh, he did it. Oh, he can do it again for me. Okay. But then is what you do on a daily basis.
But again, I'm going back to that word culture. It seems like no matter where you go, you've developed a culture, a winning culture. And one of the things that I'm most impressed with is no matter where you've gone, most of the time you've left that culture with the team, which is even more important. Because a lot of coaches, when they know that their time is up, they can start to destroy a team or a club. Or, you know what I mean? They kind of know, like they read the writing on the wall. And they're like, okay, I'm out of here. I'm going to make sure when I go that this team's not going to be successful without me. It seems like you leave a little bit more of a legacy when you leave places.
I want to leave a legacy. I'm in love with what I'm doing. So I cannot ruin that. It's like my creature, you know. I put so much energy in developing that I want to leave a legacy. It's for sure. And whenever my former team struggles, I'm really sad.
Yeah. Okay. So it does affect you to see your old, you follow your old teams and you make sure that they're doing good. And I mentioned before about getting the teams together. How hard has it been this year? I mean, we're not going to ignore, we talked about a little bit, but we're not going to ignore the fact of what's going on in the world today. This COVID-19, the pandemic. You said right off the bat, you said, I'm healthy. Instead of saying I'm good, I'm healthy. How hard was it to put a team together this year? How hard is it to get that team to gel, because you're dealing with so many disruptions to your plans, your schedules, sometimes your lineup?
I feel players concerned, but we have a great chemistry, and this is not a secret. We have different personalities. The mix is successful, and we will have up and downs. We will not win every game, but my team plays every game. And as a coach, I'm very thankful, and I give credit to them that they understood that what I was trying to do, and they gave me the chance to do it. Authority is something that nowadays is not hitting the table with a fist and saying, we do the things this way because it is this way, and we always did it this way. In front of you, we have people that are curious, can look right and left, can see how the world is going. It's you need to win them. You need to win them. There's no shortcuts. You need to win your players. And basically you have to build the authority, caring for them, showing that you care. Tough love. I believe that the right word is tough love. You're still the coach. You still have to take decisions, hard decisions, difficult decisions. You're responsible for what you're doing and what the team is doing. But without the players and showing that you care for them and you build the authority in a positive way, you cannot be successful.
You seem to have, and I don't know if you feel this way or not, but you seem to have a little bit of a Serbian coach's mentality in your body. Does that come from mom and grandma? And
I mean, that comes from my Balkanic roots. That comes from my love for Balkanic basketball, for the players, for the toughness, for their unbelievable hunger to win and to succeed. They will always try to succeed. And I believe that area, geographic area, is the crib of basketball in Europe. And now it's spread all over Europe.
Did you study coaches from Serbia? Did you study the
of course.
You did. Who is the people? Ipkovic? Who are the people that you liked the most?
Being the coach of Partizan, I had the luck to be on a live Hall of Fame. You know, I had Hall of Fame in front of me every day. So players, coaches, and I tried to steal from everybody, you know, from Vujošević, Žeravica, Nikolić, Obradović, Ivković. They are, it's a Hall of Fame. What do you want more? It's like on Springfield, not message, Springfield, Beograd.
Yeah, and I don't know, we should call it the Vitch Hall of Fame. Exactly. The Vitch Hall of Fame. I read up on, we're just finishing up right now, so personally, I read up on you on some other podcast that you did. Wasn't as good as this one, but it was all right. It wasn't bad. Your philosophies are identical to what I've always felt about the game, is like how players should play the game, the spacing, the timing. The one curiosity to me were the angles of the screens that I always like talked about. There's different angles of screens that could make you an offensive team or a defensive team, even if you have the ball in your hand. And one of my favorites is that you said is a good shot is just that. It's a good shot. It doesn't matter if it goes in. I coach so many kids now, young kids, and it's like they expect to make every shot. And it's like, just take a good shot and don't worry about it.
Yeah, this is a challenge every day.
Yeah, simplify the game. You know, that's all you need to do is simplify it. Don't make it pretty.
Or, as you say.
Yeah. So these philosophies, did these come from just experience over time for you?
I love the word efficiency. I want to have efficient basketball. And studying basketball, scouting teams and players, I see that the simple things are the toughest to guard. If you do the thing, the little things, if you set a good screen, it's tough to guard. Right. And to set a good screen, you need the right angle. And if you have a good screen with the right angle, you're dead on defense. You have to cover with two players. That means that somebody else is open. And that means that you have a good shot.
And again, it's just simplified. And one of the things that I liked about your philosophy about video, because players hate video, coach, you know that as well as I do. Nobody likes to sit down and watch video. But one of your philosophies is 15 minutes of video. We break it down. Half of it's watching video. Half of it's talking about it. And half of it's negative. Half of it's positive. And that makes a player so much more apt to learn in a video session, I feel, anyway, through my experiences over time, than just going like, oh, shit. Like, it's Monday morning and we got video at 9 o'clock.
I hate it. I want to surprise my players every time. Right. You know, when they expect me to go there hard on them, I won't do it. When they are good because they played a decent game, we just won. He won't say anything. I will jump on their neck like this because they don't expect it.
And that's great for a player because it takes away from that, oh, here we go again, we have to do this, and so forth and so on. But how many times in those video sessions or in a game, I love to ask this to a coach, will you actually listen to a player and actually, like, so if a player says, hey, coach, I think in this we need to, you know, instead of going this way on the screen, we need to go behind the screen or we need to do this.
Okay,
or, you know,
very interesting question. I love to talk with my players. I love to give them the opportunity to interact, but you cannot just do it like this. If you are a player that works hard, study the game, and you deserve, I'm going to give you all the opportunities to talk to me in front of the team and ask me, coach, I feel better doing like this. Right. Because maybe we tried all the other ways, we went hard, and we saw that this is the best way. And I say, no problem, man. You are a player that goes hard and deserve to be listened to. Right. I don't do this when somebody just want the shortcut. Right. You know, I don't want to show pick at all because maybe, you know, maybe you're just lazy.
Exactly. So you have to kind of earn that respect from you too.
Yes, but authority is not the fist on the table or just yelling and don't give the chance to anybody to feel good. You know, I don't believe that you can build something with fear. No, I don't believe. Competence.
Yeah, fear is something that is, there's a fine line between fear and respect. I've always said that as a parent, as a coach, as an authoritative figure, there's a very fine line. And people who don't know how to walk that line on the respect side seem to lose out because of the fear. But, you know, I feared my father, but I respected him when I grew up.
Yes, because... but you cannot fear somebody for little things.
No, of course not.
And fear for big things, what is something really big on stake. But not for little. The fear, oh, what if I step on, he was going to yell at me. No, this is not the right fear. This is not a positive fear.
Last question. Before COVID, I spoke with people all the time, kids, companies, you know, motivational speaking, stuff like that. Unfortunately, now that's kind of like a past thing. But one of my biggest concerns with kids was, number one, is life is so easy because every time you want to do something, you just go onto Google and boom, you got the answer in 3 minutes. The other thing is video games. Kids sit around and watch and play video games all day long. It's a generation of being able to sit around and do nothing and play video games all day. Players are way more stronger, they're quicker, they're more talented, they're whatever today, but I can't imagine how many players there would be in life that if they weren't sitting at home playing video games their whole life would be even better at what they do, whether it's basketball, football, whatever sport it is or whatever they want to do.
I have two kids and I'm fighting with them about PlayStation or these things. And then they answer to me, but everybody's doing like this. We don't want to be different.
Right.
So balance is the key. Do whatever it takes to be the best version of yourself. Invest on yourself. Then the PlayStation is perfect. You will cool down with the PlayStation. But if you just do what you are supposed to do without some extra effort, and then the PlayStation or chatting or the social media becomes an obstacle to your growth. It's simple, you know. I don't believe you have to take away things. You have to manage the things in the proper way with great balance, knowing that what is your core business? PlayStation will be the best player that you can. Then if you answer to this small question, you're going to be good.
I believe my philosophy in life is anything, almost anything, of course, anything in life in moderation is okay. As long as you're moderating it and you have it and you're able to control it, it's fine.
I would not say to be moderate when you're in basketball.
Well, no, I mean, no.
If basketball is your core business, your priority in life,
no, there's no.
How can be a priority if you just dedicate 2 hours per day? It's not a priority.
I remember interviewing Sardis and he said to me, he's like, I got players that come to me, they're like, I work hard every day. And he looks like, you're not working hard. He's like, if you think that's working hard, you're never going to make it in life.
Exactly. Sardis is totally right.
All right, let's finish this thing off. We got a couple questions for you and we're done.
One-on-one with Joe R. Lucas.
You got a free round trip ticket anywhere around the world. I'm not buying it. EuroLeague's buying it for you. What's your destination? Where are you going?
I give you two. Pitcairn Islands is the most remote place on Earth.
Pitcairn Islands?
Pitcairn is...
I don't think I've ever even heard of that.
Google it.
I'm going to.
It's amazing. It's something... It's a place that is nowhere. It's small islands, group of islands, where the Mutiny of Bounty.
Okay.
Their DNA of the Mutiny of Bounty people there.
All right.
And then I want to do the Camino de Santiago de Compostela.
Ah, okay. Perfect.
Something that I want to do. I don't know how long or how many kilometers, but I believe it's something that is touchy and I want to do it before or later.
Well, you tell me you're coming here. We'll do a little Chianti. We'll have a little stop and we'll do a little bottle of wine.
No, for sure. Hey, we do it stops, wine,
exactly.
Food.
Exactly.
For sure.
Last movie you watched?
Oof.
Your favorite movie, whichever one you want to go to.
No. My last movie was on streaming, of course, for the pandemic. It was The Social Dilemma.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I saw that.
Very superficial, but okay. They opened the Pandora box without saying the whole truth, but I'm scared for my kids. telling you the truth.
I know it's difficult. You sit down at a table, you could order anything in the world.
Wow.
What's your go-to meal?
I imagine a huge table, and I want a lot of friends, and I want to have street food from everywhere in the world. I want to have ramen. I want to have falafel. I want to have pizza fritta. I want to have dim sum. I want to have cachapuri. All the best things from everywhere, in empanadas.
I'm not sure I could accept that answer because it's supposed to be one meal, but I like it.
Hey, this is my meal. I want to okay. Small things, small portions.
All right, this is our first crossover this season, so I think I'm going to have to change that question because that would be my answer right now. Your childhood idol or your idol today, it doesn't matter.
When I was young, Dražen Petrović was really, I really liked him. I really liked his way of doing the thing. He was...
His bravado.
His arrogance. He was arrogant. And he was Steph Curry in the 80s.
Yeah.
And you played against him, right?
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Not easy to guard, eh?
But I heard he was one of those guys that was better to play against him than with him. He was tough to play with, too.
He won't pass you the ball. Yeah.
And you know me, I didn't like anybody to pass me the ball, so...
But, you know, in that age, 15, 16, he was in his prime. And then I switched the subject and I went for... You know, I start reading and Churchill, because besides all his great defects as a human being, you know, drink a lot, what he was able to do in the toughest, in the darkest time of the mankind to keep a nation together under that circumstances make me...
Kept the nation together through a sport, which is incredible, individually.
Yes. And Nikola Tesla for being ahead of the time.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great answer. I like that. I like that one.
I had the chance to learn more when I was in Belgrade. And I fall in love. I'm stupid.
Yeah, but you sound like a romantic. That's good.
Yeah, I'm romantic. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
And pre-game superstitions?
Not much. Small things. Socks, glasses, like this. I try to match them according to the opponent.
Nice. One game that you can go back in time and would love to replay, and why, of course.
No, I don't live on regrets. I live on the next thing to do.
All right, that's fair. I'll accept that one, I think. We'll see if that one's acceptable or not, but you're giving it out to like all the other people that are gonna have to answer these questions.
You know, I can think.
No, forget it. I like the answer. Be original. Because this one you can't change. Tell me your top three EuroLeague memories.
If you asked me this question 1 year ago, I would give you an easy answer. I can remember Basile shot in Bilbao for our first top 16 with Cantu. Printezis, because I was at the game in Istanbul. But then, now if I stop, and I just want the fans. I can see of the ball of the Basile, the ball of parentheses, but I see Sven's behind this ball.
Yeah.
And now I don't want to give you the memory. I want to give you my hope. I want the fans back as soon as possible.
Man, you just gave me the chills, man. I'm just like, I'm sitting here going, that's an incredible answer. It's just, you know, when
you see the ball,
yeah.
You see the fans behind the ball.
And that's something that like when I watch the replay, I don't watch the play anymore. I watch all the emotions and all the movements and the faces and the screaming. And I love that. That's a tremendous answer.
So no memories, just hopes.
You just took that one from everybody. That's a good too. All right. When this is all done and over with. I mean, obviously, I'm sure your answer is going to be, I'll quit basketball when I lose my passion and my love and everything else.
I don't see this coming yet.
Yeah, but I'm okay, then you're going to get old. The question is, what's your plans when this is all over with? But I got a feeling you're going to do this right into retirement until your last day.
I don't know. I know that to be good in what I do, I sacrifice a lot. And I just want to be best father I can. Because I sacrificed a lot of time for my kids. Nobody's gonna give it back to me. And sometimes I feel guilty.
How old are your kids?
12 and 9.
12 and 9. And they're with you everywhere you go?
No. this is, we couldn't do it, and or we didn't want to do it. It's different. We want stability in the life of the kids. I change countries, teams, and
It's tough to be a coach and have a family. It's not an easy.
One very wise person told me that his name is Professor Koprivica. He was the conditioning coach in Partizan Belgrade. One of the most important person I met in my life. You know, he's so inspirational. He told me that behind any success of a sportsman, coach, player, there is a huge injustice towards himself. All the things that you had to give up to be successful.
Yeah, it's tough, man. It's tough for a coach. It's tough for a player. Sometimes when they're not around the kids the whole time, it's a difficult situation. But, you know, because there's that unfair balance of giving your family.
It's never fair. The life. Never fair.
Yeah, it's just, it's difficult, but... Like you said, we make our decisions for whatever. You have to make the best of it. That's what you're doing.
Definitely.
That's a good
one. We want to be the best.
That part's over. Five questions and you're done. These are our EuroLeague test questions, and we're going to rank you guys on they go from easiest to hardest. Let's see.
The crossover test.
Who was the last Final Four MVP?
Last year we didn't play EuroLeague, so Final Four. So
who was the last one? There was somebody before that we didn't play last year.
Doesn't come to my mind.
All right, that's 0 for 1. Will Clyburn.
True. He just killed me. Maybe this is the reason because I didn't want to say it.
Yeah, exactly. That's I forgot.
I knew
about
it
that.
Perfectly, but I didn't want to say it.
Why give him any credit, right?
No, he deserved all.
Yeah, he's incredible player.
He had an amazing career. He started small teams.
Yeah, exactly.
And he climbed up.
I love watching his career and everything he's done. And now that they're coming back from the knee injury, he's even more inspirational.
He's a Swiss knife.
Yeah, exactly. Question number 2. How many German teams have reached the EuroLeague playoffs? Boom. Correct. 0. That meant 0, right? That didn't mean 3.
No. I'm Italian.
Okay.
Three is like this for us.
Three is like, there you go. Question 3. What two players share a record for having appeared in 18 EuroLeague seasons this century?
So in the 2000s, right?
Yep.
18.
18 different seasons they've played.
Wow.
I'll give you a hint on one of them. You just mentioned them not too long ago. I shouldn't be giving hints, but.
Wow.
Istanbul, Final.
No, I'm thinking it could be Printezis.
There's one.
Vasily Spanoulis, no, because he was in Houston. So, 18. Navarro retired too early. Not in this century. So, no, I cannot get it.
Jankunis.
True.
It better be true. This is the answers they're giving me. It's not that I know these. Believe me, I wouldn't have known them either.
Mm-hmm.
Question number 4. Which player scored the most free throws in EuroLeague history?
I'm not a big fan of numbers. Navarro.
No, Spanoulis.
Vasily. Bill. Kill Bill.
Kill Bill. Last question. You got to get this one right. Two current EuroLeague coaches were the fastest to 100 victories in the competition, doing it in only 124 games. Who are they?
Itudis.
That's one.
And Saras.
No. Xavi Pascual. Coach, that's it for this interview. I walked into this interview researching you with the idea that there's nothing better. If I can go back in time and do this again, I'd love to play a couple of years for you because you just seem like that type of coach that gets the most out of somebody. Everything that I've researched, everything I've learned about you, sitting here talking to you, to me has just been inspirational. It's been amazing. And I can't do nothing but wish you the best of luck. And this season especially, this is going to be a big season for everybody with everything going on. And and the rest of your life with your family, with your kids, with everything, man. You're just a player. I cannot wait till you come and do the Camino de Santiago and I meet you somewhere. We can sit down and have a bottle of wine together.
Yes, yes. Bravo. That's a good point. It was really a pleasure.
Please get in touch with me, coach. Please get in touch with me when you come to Spain or whenever this whole pandemic thing is gone and I could actually get down on the floor again and see you guys and you come into town. I promise you I'm inviting you to a bottle of, maybe a Spanish wine.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, when I go to Italy, you give me the Chiantes and the good stuff.
We're good. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.